Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production.
Now available on Apple Podcasts,
Podcast One, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Today on the Charlie Kirk Show, big tech is on the march to interfere in the 2020 election. And I think they went way too far this time. We have the exclusive insight about the biggest companies in the country trying to interfere in the election. Email us your questions, freedom@charliekirk.com. Please consider supporting us at charliekirk.com/support. And also, if you want to win a signed copy of the MAGA Doctrine, just show us that you're subscribed to the Charlie Kirk Show and tell us that you heard this program. Charlie Kirk Show, hit subscribe, screenshot and email it to us at freedom@charliekirk.com, freedom@charliekirk.com. Big tech is on the march. We have the answers. We have the solutions. And we expose who is financed by big tech. That and more. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Small business banking? There's only one name that you need to know. It's Azlo. A-Z-L-O. Azlo offers a free business checking account with invoicing, bill pay, no minimum balance requirements, and no maintenance or overdraft fees. Instead of days it takes at a traditional bank, when you're still required to go in person with Azlo, you just go to azlo.com, A-Z-L-O.com, and apply in minutes. There's no waiting to use your account. With Azlo's free instant funding feature, you can deposit $1,000 and access it instantly. And now they've launched the all-new Azlo Pro Bundle, for only $10 a month, with tools like unlimited envelopes to organize your money, discounted instant transfers, and the ability to set up recurring invoices. Because you listen to this podcast, you can try Azlo Pro free for 14 days at azlo.com/charlie. Azlo's banking services are provided by BBVA USA, member FDIC. Money Magazine's called Azlo the, quote, best business banking option for freelancers and entrepreneurs. And Azlo's co-founder is one of Fortune Magazine's latest 40 Under 40. I've been there, too. Learn more with a free copy of Azlo's Small Business Starter Guide or get started right now and get a Azlo Pro free 14-day trial at azlo.com/charlie. azlo.com/charlie. Yesterday, we led with the breaking bombshell news from the New York Post that published an article written by Emma Jo Morris that really revealed that Hunter and Joe Biden were in on it together, meeting with Ukrainian CEOs, the number three of Burisma, completely contradictory to what Joe Biden had said previously. This story was on pace to be a very big story. This story was definitely going to dominate the conservative news cycle for at least a couple days, but there was no guarantee that this story would have long-term political implications. No guarantee of that. We have had revelations of Hunter Biden and Joe Biden flying an Air Force 2 together to China to help raise capital for Hunter Biden's pseudo investment fund, something he was vastly unqualified for. There have been revelations of Joe Biden and his brother doing shady business deals together in Iraq that he was unqualified for. So this was big news for those of us that care about justice and those of us that actually want to see a fair and equal application of the law. But as soon as I read the story, I said, this is going to kind of get swept under the rug. And we talked about yesterday actually focusing the presidential campaign more on Kamala Harris than Joe Biden. And I stand by that. I think that is exactly right politically. However, big tech, the biggest companies with trillions of dollars of market cap value, the capacity, the ability, and the power to censor everything that you consume, they decided that they want more people to know about this story. And I said, what are you talking about? I thought it was the exact opposite. What happened yesterday was nothing short of what is called the Streisand effect. The Streisand effect, some would call it a social phenomenon. It occurs when somebody in a position of power attempts to hide or remove or censor information. By doing so, it has unintended consequences. The censor actually becomes the PR agent. The censor actually becomes a publicist. This is named after Barbara Streisand, of course, who tried to suppress photographs of her residence in Malibu, California in 2003, which only drew more attention to it. And so this Streisand effect has many different examples. You could go through in 2013, there were many examples of this. In 2018, one of the most famous examples is actually in 2019 when Devin Nunes filed a lawsuit against Twitter, which then became a big story about even bigger than what Twitter would have ever imagined when they were trying to suppress the story themselves. But this is probably one of the most politically applicable examples of the Streisand effect. By trying to suppress this New York Post story, the tech companies have actually become the publicist for the New York Post. So let's just do a quick recap. In the story, we found out that there was a laptop that Hunter Biden brought to a computer repair shop in Delaware, dropped it off, never followed up for it, by the way. And the computer repair shop, I didn't even know there was computer repair shops anymore. Is this really a thing? I did not know that there were still computer repair shops. Hunter Biden drops off his MacBook Pro with a Beau Biden sticker on it and forgets about it. The computer repair shop owner believes it was Hunter Biden who dropped off the computer. He's legally blind, we have just learned, and can't contact him, makes a copy of the computer, and then contacts the feds. The feds get a federal subpoena, and they take the laptop with it, all the emails, the data, but there was a backup. The backup was then given to Mayor Rudy Giuliani's lawyer, Mr. Costello. You just can't put together a narrative more perfect than this. Of course he's named Mr. Costello. I mean, what else would he be named? And that we can only assume that then Mayor Giuliani gave this to the New York Post and then it got publicized. Facebook and Twitter, they both handled this similarly, but a little bit differently. Twitter was out of control. Twitter literally did not allow you to tweet the article, suspending Kayleigh McEnany's account, suspending some of the top accounts in all of conservative media and even nonpartisan media trying to publicize this article. Jack Posobiec, The New York Post, Kayleigh McEnany, Team Trump, Sohrab Ahmari, the opinion editor at The New York Post, all of which were unable to just share a factual article of real information. So then Facebook came out, and the Facebook communications director, who formerly was head of all communications for the Democrats, he tweeted out, quote, "This is part of our standard process to reduce the spread of misinformation. We temporarily reduce distribution pending fact checker review." He went on to say, "While I intentionally not linked to the New York Post, I want to be clear that this story is eligible to be fact checked by Facebook's third party fact checking partners. In the meantime, we are reducing its distribution on our platform." Whoa. Andy Stone admitting that Facebook, the largest social network on the planet, is reducing distribution pending third-party review. Andy Stone, by the way, used to be head of communications for the Democrat Congressional Campaign Committee and former press secretary for Barbara Boxer. So, of course, he has a vested interest to make sure that this information is not distributed. And then Twitter went even further, where they said that if you post it, your account is going to be suspended. But by doing so, these big tech companies actually drew more attention to the story. There are more people talking about the dishonorably discharged cocaine addict Hunter Biden, who just drops off laptops at a repair shop. And doesn't even, by the way, who would drop off your personal information and laptops at a repair shop and then just forget about it? As the great Candace Owens said on Twitter, "This is why you shouldn't do crack, kids." I mean, it's just one of the dumbest things you could possibly... While your father's running for the presidency, you just decide to drop off all of your personal information. And so as we go deeper into this story, we realize that Hunter Biden and Joe Biden were almost working in tandem, working in harmony to sell access to our government. And so per the contract that Hunter Biden signed when he dropped off the laptop, the computer repairman took legal possession of the laptop and found the emails. And so it was actually legal possession. Now, mind you, Twitter and Facebook did not stop the spread of any of the articles or stories pertaining to Trump's tax returns, which were illegally leaked. They did not stop the spread of any of the stories regarding WikiLeaks, didn't stop the spread of any of the other very questionably obtained information in the political news cycle the last couple of years. But for this one, they go all in. They go all in saying that the emails were hacked. There's no evidence whatsoever, by the way, to corroborate this. It looks like it was Hunter Biden being more concerned about his next line of cocaine than actually caring about his computer or his emails. And so National Public Radio, funded by your taxpayer dollars through the stimulus bill, continued the explanation by saying, quote, Facebook was limiting distribution of the New York Post's main story. That means that the platform's algorithms won't place posts linking to the story as highly in people's news feeds. Big tech has now made two big mistakes. They have made two very big mistakes. The first mistake is they have now publicized this story more so than they ever could have wanted. If they actually want a Joe Biden presidency, they should have just allowed this story to spread. Now, millions of more people are talking about this story than would have otherwise. And the second mistake that they made is now Republicans are getting wise to who these tech companies actually are. What do you do when a company becomes more powerful than your government? What do you do when a company infringes on your natural rights? Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion, prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech, or of the press, or the right of people to peaceably assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. Congress shall make no law. What if Congress did? What if Congress passed a regulation that made it so that these tech companies are allowed to basically become Soviet-style enforcers of speech that they don't like, that threaten their political viewpoints and their own worldview? The New York Post bombshell came out, factual in nature. We're not exactly sure how Rudy Giuliani got the emails through Mr. Costello. But we are going to have Rudy on the podcast hopefully soon. Rudy's a friend. And by doing so, the tech companies engage in the Streisand effect. The Streisand effect is when you try and suppress a piece of information, it only makes it more popular and more public. And the tech companies made two big errors here. The first of which is now more people are talking about this Biden story than otherwise would have. If Biden would have ignored it, and the tech companies would have ignored it and let it spread, it would have been treated no differently than Joe Biden's comments when he said, if you don't vote for me, you ain't black. Hunter Biden flying on Air Force Two. Most people wouldn't have cared. Now it's actually entering the zeitgeist. I'm still of the opinion it's not going to move the dial politically. I think that the more you attack Hunter Biden's son from the Trump campaign, the more sympathy it gets him. I'm not exactly sure the political physics of that, but that's how the current composition of the landscape is. But the second mistake that big tech made is that they have truly poked the conservative bear. I have never seen Senate Republicans fight so hard on an issue outside of judges as I've seen in the last 24 hours. I am very critical of certain Republicans that don't fight. I was critical of the senator from Indiana when he praised BLM Incorporated back in June, where he said it's a great movement. He did retract that comment. We're pleased to see that. I am critical of Senate Republicans when they don't build the wall and they borrow a bunch of money and kowtow to China. But Senate Republicans deserve tremendous credit for how they've handled two things in the last 24 hours. The Amy Coney Barrett hearings and this new issue of big tech censorship. When you're not even allowed to tweet out an article that is factual from the New York Post, an American domestic publication company, because some tech oligarch in his pajamas in Silicon Valley who went to Caltech and he's 26 and he thinks America's an awful place, wants Biden to be elected and he pushes a button so that you're not able to share the article, I could make the argument that your freedom of speech and your capacity to petition the government for a redress of grievances in the digital era has been suppressed. And we have seen a couple senators in particular really rise to the occasion. Senator Ted Cruz, Senator Tom Cotton, and Senator Josh Hawley in particular have been phenomenal. We're going to build out more exactly what they've been saying and how and the positions they've been taking. And we on this program have been long warning about the powers that big tech possesses and the danger that they pose to a decent and fair society. In fact, I've been saying for the last 9 months, the two biggest threats to Donald Trump's reelection is social media fraud and big tech fraud and mail-in balloting fraud. We're seeing both of those play out in real time. And finally, we're seeing Republicans take this seriously. Big tech, if they really want to keep their pseudo-monopolies, they should have just let this story spread. However, discipline is not an attribute that totalitarians possess. When people always want more power, they are not able to stop themselves short of trying to take over more land or try to conquer more territory. In fact, you're seeing that this attempt to censor and suppress a New York Post article very well might spiral big tech's pseudo-monopoly over the landscape and put it into jeopardy. Senate Republicans have been fighting in the last 24 hours like I have not seen on this big tech issue. What do you do when a private company grows more powerful than your government? What do you do when a private company is directly interfering in an election and not allowing a factual, credible story from a mainstream press outlet to be shared on your tech platforms? Are you allowed to petition your government? Are you able to speak in the digital age without that? Let's play Cut 15, Senator Ted Cruz.
We have seen big tech. We've seen Twitter and Facebook actively interfering in this election in a way that has no precedent in the history of our country. Yesterday, the New York Post broke a story alleging serious corruption of Joe Biden and Hunter Biden concerning Ukraine. The allegations in the New York Post story, if true, indicate that Vice President Biden lied when he said he had never discussed his son's business dealings. That story, once the New York Post broke it, was blocked by Twitter and Facebook. Anyone who attempted to share it was prevented from sharing it on Twitter or Facebook.
I wrote an article in the Washington Post, July 11th, 2019. Give them credit for publishing this, I will say that. Where I zeroed in on, earlier than most, this idea of Section 230, the Communications Decency Act. In Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act, we created a regulation that allowed these tech companies to act with complete immunity, but still silence voices that they don't like or they disagree with. I'm going to read from my own article here. It says, the second obstacle to free market, is big tech's exploitation of pre-existing laws, namely Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act, which was passed in Congress in the 1990s. Social media companies like Facebook and Google have leveraged Section 230 to great effect and astounding profits by claiming they are platforms, not publishers, thereby avoiding under the law billions of dollars in potential copyright infringement and libel lawsuits. YouTube, for example, advertises itself as an open platform, quote, committed to fostering a community where everyone's voice can be heard. Facebook and Twitter make similar claims. Let's be clear, when these companies censor or suppress conservative content, or just any content, they are behaving as publishers and they should be held legally responsible for all the content they publish. If they want to continue hiding behind Section 230 and avoid financial and legal calamity, they must reform. That was July of 2019, and it's only gotten worse since then. Not every tech company acts the same. Twitter has been completely out of control. Google is by far the most powerful of all of them. At times, just based on sharing our content and our capacity, Facebook has allowed us to be able to continue to stream this program live, and we're thankful for that. But we're at the mercy of these tech companies. One person pushing one button at any time could digitally assassinate us. Their entire model is surveillance capitalism. They're selling your data. And we are completely at the mercy, despite the years of intellectual property, the tens of thousands of posts. For example, I've tweeted well over 45,000 times, amassed well over 1.8 million followers, and that all could be disappeared, that all could be vanished almost instantaneously. But why is it that these tech companies have been able to act this way for so long? Why have we allowed a company that basically is in the model of selling you surveillance capitalism to addict our children to your supercomputers, to turn us into quasi-cyborgs? Why are we tolerating these companies amassing such incredible market share and also very questionable activity in the marketplace? CNBC, in June 9th, 2019, Google is tech's top spender on lobbying. Facebook and Amazon are also at record levels. Google spent $21.7 million on lobbying in 2018, 38% up from 2 years earlier. Facebook is close behind them. They're spending tens of millions of dollars in Washington, D.C. to make sure that politicians do not scrutinize, subpoena, or question the power that they have over our country. I'm going to do something you're not supposed to do in an election cycle. That's why you guys listen to us, and that's why you guys support us at charliekirk.com/support. I'm going to go through a list of names of people in the Republican Party that are funded by Google. You want to know why nothing changes? It's because a lot of our party is funded by these people. That's why. And I know a lot of these people. They're good people. A lot of them just hire fundraisers, and they don't even know that they're getting money from Google. But let's start with the big number. Let's start with the House. We'll go to the Senate. Google, in just the 2020 election cycle, contributed $358,000 to Democrats and $304,000 to Republicans. So definitely a Democrat tilt in the House. Why? Because Democrats are in power. Google is not contributing to these members of Congress because they believe in their ideological or philosophical beliefs. They are not donating to these members of Congress because they like their views on social policy. They are donating to these members of Congress for something in return. They want access. They want favors. They want legislative priority. They have predetermined corporate budgets to purchase your members of Congress so that they can get what they want done, which is a congressional hall pass so that they can create a multi-trillion dollar company to spy on your kids, sell your data, customize your content, and become more powerful than our own government. So I can go through the list first and foremost of the people in the House. It's a lot of Democrats, a lot of Republicans, a lot of surprises here. Democrats from Mike Quigley in Illinois. Of course, Nancy Pelosi took the maximum amount. Too many Republicans on this list, to be perfectly honest with you. John Shimkus, I know him. He should return the money. Steve Scalise, what are you doing, man? Return the money. Jan Schakowsky, of course, she took the money. Adam Schiff, Brad Schneider. This is all publicly available, by the way. And it's through an organization called NetPAC, which is Google Incorporated, Alphabet's way of contributing. But the House is not nearly as interesting. Plenty, almost every House Republican leader is taking money from Google. This is why nothing gets done. If your representatives are talking a good game about regulating the tech companies while then taking money from the tech companies, you got a problem. It's nothing more than vapor. But the more interesting thing is the Senate. The U.S. Senate, this is just the 2020 election cycle. Total contributions from Google, the Democrats, $44,500. Total Google contributions to Republicans, $153,000. Google has given three times the amount of money to Republicans than Democrats in the U.S. Senate. Why? Not because they believe in the philosophical underpinnings of limited government and Lockean natural rights. It's not because they are a big believer in Edmund Burke or William F. Buckley or Russell Kirk. It's because Republicans are in power and they want to make sure that they can have input and legislative favor. By the way, this should be illegal. Just so we're clear, this entire process is disgusting. That a multi-trillion dollar company that controls your data, can look at your emails, your search results, 92% of all search results in our country, that all of a sudden they can just go make $153,000 in contributions, which is a rounding error of a lunch tab and not even pays the fuel cost for the Google executives to get on their $90 million plane to fly halfway across the country, that all of a sudden they can have legislative priority. This should be illegal, but it's not. So instead, many of our Senate Republicans are taking massive contributions from Google. You guys are worried about big tech? Well, then start challenging your representatives to stop taking money from these companies. Senator Joni Ernst, who's great. I don't know why she took $10,000. Cory Gardner, $14,000. Bill Cassidy, $5,000. Is it really worth it? Doug Collins, I know him, $10,000. Susan Collins, $10,000. Chris Coons, not a surprise, Democrat, $5,000. John Cornyn, $9,000. And a lot of them will say, I didn't even know I took the money. It's not a big difference. Then return it. Then do a statement and return the check and make something out of it. That if it's not a big deal and it doesn't impact you, then why are you still have it? It's self-defeating. This is still the House list here. Ben Sass, $4,500. Tim Scott, Gene Shaheen, Democrat, $6,000. Dan Sullivan, Republican from Alaska, $9,000. Tom Tillis, $4,000. This should make you sick to your stomach, by the way, guys. While we are under attack and we are fighting these oligarchs, our Republicans are taking money from them to get reelected, to keep having power. Roger Wicker, who runs the committee that actually can help us keep these people in power, $5,000. I will say this, though. You want to know some positives? I do. Lindsey Graham did not take money from Google. Good for you, Lindsey Graham. Senator Ted Cruz, Josh Hawley, and Cotton, Senator Tom Cotton, did not take any money from Google. That's a terrific thing. David Perdue, $7,500. Google is not doing this because they believe in these deeply held beliefs, but it's worse than this. A lot of the think tanks that justify not going after big tech, they're also funded through tax-deductible contributions to write these long, meandering, factless, and baseless, and anti-American white papers to give these senators cover fire so that we don't ever dare ask a question of the multi-trillion dollar empires that control the entire conversation in our country. So it is a deliberate attempt from Google in particular, as you can see here, to try to purchase our politicians, to try and steer the conversation. I think it's admirable, the amount of innovation that these tech companies have done. I think it's very, you know, worthy. It's very praiseworthy that they've been able to build these companies, and computer processing power is up 1,000,000,000% since the 1980s, and they've done a great job of that. However, when you are a trillion-dollar company, that's right, a trillion-dollar company, and your basic business model is to sell the data of the people that come to your website or your services, and then you censor opinions you don't like under the guise of trying to have a decent and fair conversation, don't be surprised when half the country gets pretty upset at you. If you disallow people to speak, all of a sudden, you won't have a country. And for Republicans out there, consider this your grace period. every Republican, return the money now, or you will not have a political future, and you will not be able to morally defend your position. You guys have all seen Social Dilemma, Netflix. Well, maybe not Netflix because they're a pedophile network. But if you've seen Social Dilemma, which, again, I'm not exactly sure how you square that, they talk about how tech insiders explain how social media is engineered to exploit users' data for profit. They call it surveillance capitalism. Look, I'm cool with normal capitalism, where I'm willing to participate in the transaction, like every time I go to the store to buy food. But when my data is being harvested so tech billionaires can get even richer, that's where I draw the line. And that's why I put a layer of protection around my data with ExpressVPN. Every time you use the internet, big tech companies and the surveillance capitalists and the oligarchs, they track your searches, messages, and video history. But when you run through ExpressVPN, it hides your IP address, which websites can use to personally identify you. That makes your activity more difficult to trace and sell to advertisers. ExpressVPN also encrypts 100% of your internet data to keep you safe from hackers and from prying eyes. Many VPNs slow down your internet, but not ExpressVPN. It's incredibly fast and easy to use. Just one tap of a button and you're protected. ExpressVPN.com/Charlie. That's E-X-P-R-E-S-S. VPN.com/Charlie. ExpressVPN.com/Charlie. I have an ExpressVPN on right now. Why don't you? ExpressVPN.com/Charlie. I pray there's a realignment happening where Republicans realize not every corporation out there is actually on your team or on your side just because they give you money. If you look at the massive capital flows from the tech companies that are flowing to Republicans, you just look at Alphabet, which is the Google holding company or the publicly traded company. Their market cap today is about $1 trillion today. That's their market cap. With $161 billion in revenue from last year. That's just their revenue. And they spent total lobbying expenses, $12.7 million in 2019. It is a coffee bill for them. They are able to protect their multi-trillion dollar incumbency by giving $2,500 here and $2,800 there to people that want to just continue to get reelected. And this is something that Republicans must realize, is that the left, they have seen an opportunity in big tech that they have never seen before. You see, the left used to be very interested in using the government to try and penalize, socialize, or take over these tech companies. There's a new kind of wing of the Democrat Party that is a technocratic wing of the Democrat Party. They know they're probably never going to be able to nationalize or socialize the tech companies. Instead, they want the tech companies to be staffed with people that used to work for them, like Andy Stone from Facebook, to be staffed with Caltech and Stanford and Berkeley graduates that are all Marxists. And they can wink and nod and do backroom deals with these private companies that have total immunity to go after political opponents that they don't like so the Democrats can control more power. People say that the tech companies are like wings of the Democrat Party. That's true, but it's even more insidious than that. It's way actually more malevolent. These are wings of the government. These are unchecked, unelected, unknown wings of a tyrannical government that march at the directives of the most radical elements of the Democrat Party. And so if you're going to hide behind your free market dogma and just say, we don't touch these companies ever, like David French tweeted that out or something. Oh, yeah, these tech companies are wonderful. Okay, great. They'll eat you last then. Okay, terrific. Then you're completely inconsequential to this whole conversation. And I think that you're taking an anti-patriotic view in this sense. I really believe that. But if you are concerned about the erosion of speech and the deletion of opposition ideas, this is the fight right now. The First Amendment was always designed to protect minority opinion. And we have sound here of Josh Hawley, Lindsey Graham, Ted Cruz, one after the other, in complete harmony, recognizing and realizing the threat that big tech poses to a decent and civil society. But we've always known that the left does not want freedom of speech. They do not want different ideas. They consider any sort of capacity of conversation and dialogue to be an annoyance or an obstacle to their power grab. The Democrats have always considered a debate, a discussion, as kind of a roadblock, because they know that when you have discussion, then you get nuance and it's harder to assume total political power because it's harder to hate the other side. That's the utilitarian argument for dialogue. And so the left has gotten very smart here. Instead of using the Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders line that they want to break up and nationalize these companies, the Adam Schiff types and the Pelosi types, they say, no, no, no. We can control these companies and they will do what we want them to do. These tech companies will be the Gestapo of the Democrat Party. These tech companies will march around and digitally assassinate people that they want gone. They'll be the disappearing squad. When a story comes out against Joe Biden that they don't like, the tech companies will immediately say, can't share it on our platform. When someone gets a little bit too spicy, when someone gets a little bit too honest, like Jack Posobiec, we're going to ban his account. When all of a sudden there is information that very well might be true being spread against the Democrat power structure, we're going to assassinate it. That's the realignment that's happened here, is the Democrats are completely in an unholy marriage with corporate America. Let's go to Senator Lindsey Graham, who I don't know what to expect out of Lindsey sometimes. I really hope he wins because he's running up against a far leftist Marxist in South Carolina. He should be okay. Jamie Harrison, cut 11. Senator Lindsey Graham calls out the hypocrisy and play tape of 11.
That a lot of information, the Steele dossier was all over the place. They never blocked that. All the allegations about Russian collusion and Trump and every other idea that Trump may have done something bad, nobody blocked that. So what we're going to do is we're going to finally have an accounting that's long overdue.
So here's the best way I can explain it to those of you that don't really use social media. Maybe you're 40 plus years old or 50 or 60. I want you to have the same sort of fear, the same sort of apprehension and skepticism towards these tech companies that you have towards the IRS and the Chinese Communist Party. That's the type of power these people have. The power to audit you, the power to target you, the power to silence you. Senator Josh Hawley, who again has been absolutely terrific, I'm going to do whatever I can to help him. He has been the greatest surprise in the U.S. Senate in the last couple of years. Play cut 12.
We also believe in free elections, and the attempt to rig an election, which is what we are seeing here by monopolies, is unprecedented in American history. They have a lot to answer for, and I hope that we'll subpoena both Twitter and Facebook. They should both come. They're both engaged in censorship. They're both massive monopolies. They should answer to the Judiciary Committee. They should answer to the full Senate. They should answer to the American people.
Let me be very clear. If these tech companies were silencing the Trump tax return story, could you imagine what Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi, do you think how they'd be treating these tech companies? These tech companies are interfering more in the election than Russia or China ever did or ever will. And Kayleigh McEnany, the press secretary for the president of the United States, had her account suspended. And people say you can't engage in the slippery slope. Well, Twitter went from censoring Alex Jones to the White House press secretary in just over a year. Senator Ted Cruz, who's been terrific on this issue, has been unafraid. And by the way, Josh Hawley, Lindsey Graham, Tom Cotton, and Ted Cruz, they do not take money from Google. Maybe that's why they're able to speak so freely while their colleagues are worried about offending their corporate donors. Play cut 16 of Senator Ted Cruz, who explains what Twitter and Facebook has been doing. Play tape.
That story, once the New York Post broke it, was blocked by Twitter and Facebook. Anyone who attempted to share it was prevented from sharing it on Twitter or Facebook. The New York Post itself, when it attempted to put out its story, was blocked on Twitter and Facebook. The New York Post has the fourth largest circulation of any newspaper in this country.
Fourth largest circulation. They're by no means a conservative outlet. They have plenty of covers where they went hard against Trump, being very critical against Trump. They've had opinion pieces. They are, some people say they're tabloidy in nature, but they're never unfactual in nature on the front page reporting that they do. And they have some very thoughtful writers that write for the New York Post, Sohrab being one of them. However, these big tech companies now believe that it is their duty, right, and they are now making the power grab that they have always deeply dreamed of. So what does this actually mean for the election? And this is, in some ways, I think that the Trump campaign needs to be very careful here. Because if the Trump campaign focuses too much on Joe Biden, we're going to lose in a couple weeks. We talked about at length about how the more that we attack Joe Biden, the more his favorables go up. Despite the deluge, which means flood, of corrupt stories that have been coming through against Joe Biden, Joe Biden is more popular and more is viewed more favorably amongst independents and moderates than ever before. Despite all of the persistent attacks from people like Pam Bondi and Rudy Giuliani, Joe Biden is still very well liked. Instead, the argument should be this. Here's how you tie it all together. Because of all this Biden corruption, he might be forced to resign and Kamala Harris will become president. Because of all the Biden corruption, they will blackmail Joe Biden into doing whatever socialist wish list that they want. People are not afraid of a Biden presidency. They're not. Corruption in government bothers people slightly. However, a lot of moderates and swing voters have been wrongly convinced that Donald Trump is engaged in even worse corruption because he allows foreign diplomats to stay at his hotels. These are real things that we hear on the ground. We knock on 200,000 doors from Turning Point Action across the country. And swing voters say, well, isn't Donald Trump super corrupt because he stays in his hotels? I mean, just the most out of line thinking that you could imagine that is being held by many swing voters. And I think the overfixation on Joe Biden and the story and not connecting it to what a Harris administration would do, I think would actually not help us politically. And of course, the Biden campaign press secretary, he is just leaning on. So they just have interinstitutional coordination here. It is so incredibly Orwellian. It's easy to explain, but it's actually a lot deeper. Let's play cut 13. I'm going to tell you exactly what's going on here. Play cut 13.
Well, look, I think Twitter's response to the actual article itself makes clear that these, purported allegations are false and they're not true. And glad to see social media companies like Twitter taking responsibility to limit misinformation.
Do you see what's happening here? He didn't actually talk about the allegations. He's leaning, right? The press secretary is now leaning on the censorship of a $50 billion company, Twitter. And he's saying, it must be false because Twitter's censoring it. Well, why is Twitter censoring it? He never explains that, never pressed on that, never asked that question. So this is what ends up happening is that these campaigns and these politicians and these Democrat leaders, they do not have to explain their corruption away because then they just lean on their communications arm, the tech companies, to explain it away for them. So instead of actually diving deep and talking about, Joe Biden did meet with the third head of Burisma with Hunter Biden, they just use censorship as invalidation. Do you see how dangerous this is? Do you see how they no longer need to provide a defense for anything that their candidate has done, just as long as one of the largest, most valuable, and powerful companies on the planet decides to censor it? In fact, the Biden press secretary praises the censorship. And so this is a very important point, is that, and I wish the Trump campaign would do this, but they're not. It's still not too late. And I gave a whole speech about this last week in Utah, which is the emerging threat of the corporatist government relationship is pseudo-fascist. And it's Donald Trump that's actually challenging corporate interests much more than Joe Biden. And if there's any socialists out there, and there's any people in the far left that actually are worried about corporate power, Donald Trump is absolutely your candidate. If centralized power bothers you, which it should, then Donald Trump is your candidate. He wants decentralized corporate power, decentralized federal government power. He wants decentralized power altogether. That's what being a conservative is all about. And what I find to be most stunning is how the Democrats have now just betrayed their decades-old promise to their constituents to fight corporate power, to now infiltrate and become allies with that very same centralized corporate power. Let's put on our hat and act as if we were working for big tech. Let's do a little bit of a thought exercise. Why are they doing this? Why are they censoring and suppressing the Trump campaign account? Breitbart.com by the great Alim Bakari. Love that guy. We actually had him on our podcast. Think very highly of him. Twitter locks Trump campaign account less than 3 weeks before presidential election. Has a nice smiling selfie of Jack Dorsey. Why are they doing this? And I the obvious answer is not the right answer here. It's like, oh, because they hate Trump. Well, that's strategically really dumb. And these are publicly traded companies. They have a fiduciary responsibility. They have shareholders. Why are they doing this? It is not ideological. It's not. If it was ideological, I think it's somewhat ideological. I think it's more than that. I think that Twitter and Facebook to a lesser extent, and definitely Google, I think that they're surveying the landscape. I think that they're seeing internal chatter and they're seeing maybe things that we see or don't see. And they think that if they're able to push a little bit, it will make sure that Donald Trump loses and they can get the soft credit from it from the new administration and they will not be regulated and they won't be shut down. So to put on your tech company hat, these tech companies are guessing. They are conjecturing that win or lose, the Republicans are going to make a stance critical of them. So these tech companies have basically stripped themselves of any sort of appearance, of any sort of mirage of trying to be fair and equal. So you see here, Alim Bakari writes that Twitter has suspended the Trump account for calling Joe Biden a liar, as it refers to the New York Post article. Suspends the Trump account, the official campaign account. House Judiciary Committee as well. Suspending a part of our government. So what happens when a private company starts censoring our government? Has that ever happened before? Has a private company ever censored our... I guess it has. I would imagine a newspaper has probably done that before. But this is such unprecedented stuff. A lot of the regulations and a lot of the ideas behind how we treat this is not necessarily applicable in a world where you can share content and information can be spread so quickly. So why are the tech companies doing this? They're doing this because they really believe that their interference 18 days out from an election is necessary. And this is where everyone is missing the story. The tech companies wouldn't be doing this if Joe Biden was assuredly going to win. The tech companies wouldn't be doing this if the internal polling, the enthusiasm index, voter registration, and the ground game was reflecting a Joe Biden wave. They wouldn't be doing this. The tech companies are doing this because there has been a distress signal sent out from the Joe Biden campaign, and they need help. That's why the tech companies are doing this. You see, you have to look at this from a business mindset. And this is where I think a lot of the conservative commentary has gone wrong on this, is that they look at it purely ideological. These are still publicly traded companies. They still have to answer to shareholders. The tech companies are doing this because they believe that the conservatives, if they get in power, they're going to get punished anyway. And these tech companies recognize and realize that they don't want to get punished and they want to be protected. Therefore, they are trying to bail Joe Biden out. And Joe Biden needs the help. They do. He does. These tech companies would not be doing this if Joe Biden was gliding to victory. And it's been well documented back in 2016 that these tech companies, being taken by surprise, being able to share stories about Hillary Clinton's corruption, significantly moved the dial in Donald Trump's direction. And again, in an unintended way, all of a sudden more people are talking about this in a Streisand effect kind of framework than we could have ever possibly imagined. I want to tell you guys about Good Ranchers. You've heard me talk about it before. We just got this unbelievable order from Good Ranchers, and the meat was incredible. It was meat unlike I've ever seen before, and it was from American Ranchers. Good Ranchers, they began with the standard of bringing top quality, 100% American-born, raised and harvested meat to families across America. This vision was instilled into them from their grandparents that owned community grocery stores and believed in trust, charity, and family values. GoodRanchers.com partners directly with only American ranchers from across the United States to bring the highest quality meat straight to your door. GoodRanchers with an S.com, you get 100% American-raised beef right to your door. GoodRanchers.com is only American beef. That's 100% born and raised, harvested beef and chicken delivered straight to your door, and free shipping as always. GoodRanchers.com with an S. Your favorite meats right to your door. Perfect for grilling out or dinners at home. Go to GoodRanchers.com to view all their American beef and chicken packages. Use the promo code Charlie, C-H-A-R-L-I-E. Promo code Charlie, GoodRanchers.com. We are in the final push towards the presidential election. I believe that Democrats are far more nervous about what's happening in this country than they lead on. And don't take my word for it. Axios.com, Mike Allen. Why Democrats remain nervous about Biden's chances. Thank you. In private, some top Democrats remain nervous about the presidential race, despite Joe Biden's lead in swing state after swing state, and strengths in state that he looked out of reach, including Georgia, Ohio, and Iowa. Tom Edsall, who works for the political science beat for the New York Times, is up with a very smart piece that says Biden is not out of the woods. Maybe he might find Hillary Clinton while he's there. Here's two pieces of information that you might not have heard. Number one, the most interesting piece of data was a massive surge in registration for working class whites. Registration meaning these people have never voted before. These are new voters to the rolls. These are not convert growth. This is not conversion growth. This is completely new into the body of voters, making the landscape in 2020 different than 2016. Edsall quotes a Democrat strategist privately circulating a newsletter as reporting that white, non-college, over the age of 30 registration in battleground states had increased by 10 points compared to 2016. And the Democrat margin dropped 10 points to just 6 points. Another key point, this is a really interesting article, by the way, that Biden is not out of the woods from the New York Times. It's very thoughtful. I'm sure that someone's going to get fired for publishing it, so it's terrific. That the Pew Research Center polling shows what Edsall calls a modest drop in the Democrat margin of support among Hispanic Catholics, and modestly weakened support among black women. And of course, operatives worry about hazards improperly returning mail-in ballots. The bottom line, as Mike Allen says in Axios.com, the Biden campaign manager, Jen O'Malley Dillon, said, quote, there is still a long way to go in this campaign, and we think this race is far closer than folks on this website think, a lot closer. And so I actually went and saw Jen O'Malley. She is the campaign manager for Joe Biden, and she's doing something that that guy named Robbie Mook, he was running Hillary's campaign. She's doing something that they didn't do. They are communicating, they are leaning in that this race is very close. Smart. I got to give Jen O'Malley Dillon credit. That will motivate the Democrat base. They will get a 1 to 2 point surge that they otherwise would not have got because they are scaring their Democrat base that Donald Trump might win again. So that's a smart strategy, but I also think it's true. It's a very interesting piece by Nick Stamatakis. It's a nice Greek name. And it is actually on a website called the Hellenoscope. So, of course, it's a Greek website. A flood of good news for Trump's reelection. Did you know that 19 million guns were sold so far in 2020? Who do you think those people are going to vote for? The firearm issue is a primary issue for President Trump's reelection. The Democrats can dismiss any dominance that they once had over the Hispanic vote. Puerto Rico's governor, Wanda Vasquez, endorsed Donald Trump, which is a big deal in Florida. I was just in Florida in Miami. I could tell you, I think President Donald Trump is going to win Florida. And I think the Biden campaign knows that too. The Biden campaign has two states that they think they can win to prevent Donald Trump from getting a wave, and that is Arizona and Pennsylvania. Maybe a Wisconsin on top of that. However, Pennsylvania can go from trending to Biden to out of control like that if the black vote does what it might do. In 2016, Trump received 9% of the black vote, but some polling shows that it could be as much as 20%. You look at other information that is coming through, there's no way to be able to articulate the enthusiasm gap. Every Trump supporter is going to show up, every single one, and they're going to bring other people to the polls. And we have to also just understand the unreliability of many of these polls. An incredible statistic just came out from some of the internal polls of the Trump campaign that 30% of participants in Trump rallies have never voted before. Can you believe this? They have not voted in 2018. They had not voted in 2016. And people are showing up to rallies and they are new on the landscape. And you look at new voter registration numbers, and the skeptic and the cynic will say, oh, these are just former Democrats that have re-registered Republicans. That's why Republicans are outpacing Democrats in Pennsylvania and Florida. I don't think that's correct. There might be millions of new people that vote here in 2020 that don't vote, that didn't vote in 16. And so I have a screenshot on my phone that I was looking over 4 years ago. Do you know how many Twitter followers Donald Trump had 4 years ago? 28 million. You know how many Twitter followers Donald Trump has now? I think it's like 64 million, 65 million. Now you might say, oh, Twitter followers doesn't mean anything. He's obviously been tweeting. He became president. I think those are all fair things. There will be millions of people that voted for Trump this election that did not vote in 2016. And I think there will be hundreds of thousands of people that will vote for Biden that voted for Trump in 2016. But I think far more people are going to be added to the rolls than subtracted. No doubt. You're starting to see a ever-emerging drumbeat of nervousness and anxiety from Democrats. I think that they've hit their ceiling. I think Donald Trump has not. So if you kind of look at this from a political strategy standpoint, Joe Biden, the reason why he's hiding, the reason why Joe Biden now is trying to retreat, is Joe Biden has maxed out the amount of voters that can vote for him. Persuadables, independents, I'm sure that there's a couple people, but basically, statistically, he can go nowhere but down. Donald Trump, not the case. That's why I think that I wish Donald Trump would have agreed to the virtual debate. Donald Trump has a lot of voters he can still win over, has a lot of voters he can still turn out, has a lot of people in the middle and the center right that he has to give a reason for them to vote for him. Talk to the 19 million people that have bought firearms this country. Talk to the Hispanics that have Puerto Rico descent that would look kindly about Wanda Vasquez endorsing him. Speak to the fact that he has put Amy Coney Barrett almost on the U.S. Supreme Court. And I went to NARAL's website. I'm here right now. And they are softly opposing Amy Coney Barrett. There have been, and I guarantee this, Democrat marching orders and internal Democrat memos to say, lean off Amy Coney Barrett. It's not working. In fact, Democrat support for Amy Coney Barrett has doubled in the last week. Trump campaign run ads of Donald Trump and Amy Coney Barrett together in Pennsylvania. That's a winning issue. The Democrats are asking very vanilla questions of her. I mean, they're asking some foolish questions. Mazie Hirono, who I don't know how she became a senator. Cory Booker is insufferable, but we know those people. But the tone is way softer, way more careful, because the Democrats know that if they misplay this confirmation hearing with Amy Coney Barrett, it will ensure a red wave. And with it, the court will be permanently, not permanently, will be a 5-3 constitutional majority with John Roberts doing whatever John Roberts does. And so As we look into this deeper, this is why big tech is doing what they're doing. I believe that the Biden campaign sent out a distress signal. And then the Biden campaign is very worried that in the final 18 days of this race, Republicans are going to do what Republicans do best, close strong. When Republicans win, they win gradually then suddenly, to use an Ernest Hemingway quote. When Republicans win, it looks bad a couple weeks out and all of a sudden it changes. Why? Because Republicans are late breakers. We always are. We communicate to people's pocketbook. We communicate to people's livelihood. We communicate to people's values. It's just a matter of just getting more decent people out to the polls. The bitter, venomous, malevolent crowd, they're going to show up no matter what. And our base will show up for gratitude and for our country and for an appreciation and a respect to preserve this incredible gift we've been given. But if President Trump, in my opinion, frames the race against the Harris administration, kind of sidesteps Biden, crushes the debate, this race is still very much to be determined. And Jen O'Malley Dillon, the campaign manager for Joe Biden, is very smart. I give her credit. She knows what she's doing. President Donald Trump has millions of people out there that he can convince to vote for him. Joe Biden has plateaued his support. Joe Biden has got his coalition. His coalition will not expand dramatically from this point forward. Everyone knows what Joe Biden stands for, Kamala Harris. You can still take a couple people away from them, though. And so, if you look at when Republicans win, they break late. Look at Donald Trump in 2016. He was down in every major poll. In the last 10 days, things just broke in his direction. Same with Ronald Reagan in 1980 against Jimmy Carter. Down in every poll, he surges to victory. Same with George W. Bush in 2000 against Al Gore. He's down in every poll and he breaks late, barely wins. Al Gore loses his home state of Tennessee and George W. Bush wins New Mexico by like 600 votes. Same could be said for H.W. Bush in 1988. Michael Dukakis was up double digits in every major poll in August, September, early October. Willie Horton ad, H.W. Bush breaks in that direction. Donald Trump has an opportunity, if he gets the messaging correct, very disciplined, this thing could get out of control for the Biden campaign very quickly. Because the fundamentals are there. The registration, the ground game, and the enthusiasm. These polls tighten, this thing might get out of control for Joe Biden. A lot happening in the country. I want to get to a cut here. Cut number two, where Joe Biden was asked a question about his son, Hunter Biden, at the Democrat presidential debate. My son did nothing wrong. I did nothing wrong. Let's get to cut two. Play tape.
Look, my son did nothing wrong. I did nothing wrong. I carried out the policy of the United States government in rooting out corruption in Ukraine.
Joe Biden previously said at a campaign rally, cut number one in Iowa after a man confronts him about selling access to the presidency. Play tape.
You're selling access to the president just like he is. So you
a damn liar, man. That's not true. And no one has ever said that. No one has heard that.
So the question should be this, though, is Mr. Biden, if George Stephanopoulos was actually doing his job, what exactly was the contractual relationship between Hunter Biden and yourself? And why did you meet with George Soros right before you met with the person from Burisma? And that's the story that everyone is missing. CharlieKirk.com article that has just been posted. Why did Biden meet with Soros the day before the Burisma email to Hunter? Biden denial of Ukrainian meeting leads to more questions. So what does George Soros have to do with this? And we should be unafraid to ask that question. There is something here that is very suspicious with Ukraine, the European ATM, the Eastern European ATM, which is the Ukrainian conflict where they fearmonger against Russia, and then all of the family members of the elected leaders make unlimited sums of money from being connected to Ukrainian proxy companies while they meet with the sitting vice president of the United States, Joe Biden. And none of this will change if Joe Biden gets elected president. Under a Harris administration, Joe Biden would not be calling the shots, but they would allow the Biden campaign, the Biden crime family, to continue on. And so will this actually move the dial in the election? Probably not. This is a bombshell that should be a considerable blow to the Biden campaign. This is a bombshell that should move things in the president's direction. And a new Florida poll just released today from the Trafalgar Group has Donald Trump up 2 points in Florida. As I have said for the last couple of weeks, President Trump will win Florida, and I will proudly vote for President Trump in Florida next week. And another new poll out from Insider Advantage. Insider Advantage, which is a very fair polling firm, has Biden only up 3 points with the margin of error being 4 in Pennsylvania. And the Trafalgar Group has Biden up only 2 points in Pennsylvania. This race is tightening. This race is narrowing. A ground game and a focus on a Harris administration can bring this thing over the top for President Trump. And yes, this corruption talk is not good for Biden. And the American people have a tolerance for a lot. But the one thing that I think that President Trump has to lean in on more with this recent revelations is how these tech companies are in bed with the Democrat Party. Because when I even talk to moderate and swing voters, when I talk to people on the left, they've seen the social dilemma. They've seen a lot of these different pieces of information. They don't think highly of these companies. And all of a sudden, if they think Joe Biden is in bed with the same companies that are making their teenage daughters think less of themselves, that their kids are on their smartphones all day long, all of a sudden, the argument for Trump must be that the Harris administration and the tech companies are one together. The ones that are selling your data, the ones that are propagandizing your children. All of a sudden, Biden is going to have to defend the incumbency of the multi-trillion dollar corporate empire. And that is a winning political issue. And I'm telling you right now, there's a surge happening. I'm looking at this polling in Pennsylvania and Florida. This race is tightening. It is Donald Trump's race to win. He's got to lock in and focus. Win Arizona, win Florida, win Pennsylvania. The fundamentals of this campaign remain very much in the president's favor. In the last 18 days of the election, what are you going to do about it? The republic rests on your action. Thank you guys for listening. What a great episode. If you want to get involved with Turning Point USA, the nation's largest student organization, fighting for freedom and liberty on campuses across the country, go to tpusa.com, where we play offense with a sense of urgency to win America's culture war. Get engaged, get involved so that we can push back against the leftist indoctrination happening in our country. Email us your questions, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Please consider supporting us at charliekirk.com/support. And please listen to our sister episode. Thank you guys so much for listening. Talk to you soon. God bless.